you coming back, for those who've come back. And if you're here for the first time, I'm going to review just for a moment, because I know yesterday there was a lot of numbers and a lot of things that were brought up, just trying to understand a process over time from beginning of a conversation all the way through to announcing change to implementing change to today. You have several points on the timeline that are of interest when you talk about any sort of change in any sort of church and in churches of Christ. You know, implementing change is an interesting thing. And I want to talk a little bit about what we talked about yesterday, just in case you weren't here. And this recorder yesterday, I think anytime I walked away, maybe kind of got a little iffy on if it was catching what I was saying. So I'm going to try to do a better job of catching this. The first thing we talked about was just understanding numbers. And I want to just spend about 30 seconds on this. And the idea was that there are things that happen in the world that are just completely random. There's nothing really acting on it to cause an effect. Okay? And so if you flip a coin, 50% of the time, you're going to get heads. 50% of the time, you're going to get tails. It's completely random. Now, every once in a while, you're going to flip a quarter, and you are actually going to get heads 3 times in a row, 4 times in a row, 5 times in a row, 6 times in a row. But it's statistically very unlikely. You're not going to do that on a regular basis. Now, if you flip a coin 85 times in a row, and it's on heads every time, you will know with absolute certainty something's wrong with this coin. Because the statistical probability of that happening is so slim that, and it's so consistent that you would just know that there's something acting on this coin. It's weighted, it's two heads on both sides. Something's going on that's not normal. There's something's affecting the outcome. So when we talk about statistical significance, we're talking about outcomes that are so outside the normal range of probability that you can say with some certainty, say with 95%+ certainty, that that number doesn't work that way at random except for, say, 5% of the time. And once we get to the point of saying this only happens randomly 5% of the time, then we begin to feel comfortable saying something's probably going on, especially if you have reason to believe it works that way through experience, through other people's research and things like that. You begin to put together your ideas and your hypothesis with the actual data that gives it some credibility to say, because again, if I do 100 experiments, if I run 100 calculations, okay, with 5% being my number, that I want to be 95% sure, that means 5% can still happen random happenstance. Just by random chance, just like the quarter flipping 8 times in a row, you might do that once in your life. That's still a random event. Do you understand? Are you hanging with me here? So we get to a point of saying, this is so far outside what's probable, plus my hunch and my gut were already telling me something was probably there, that I feel comfortable saying there's something going on here that's significant. Something's affecting the outcome. Okay? So when we talk about a correlation, we're talking about a relationship. As one goes up, the other goes up. Or as one goes down, the other goes down. That's called a positive correlation. A negative correlation is as one goes up, the other goes down. Positive correlation in life, as people get, as people on average get taller, they get heavier. An adult is heavier than a child. Okay? Negative correlation in this and these numbers was as attendance drops, people's assessment of the outcome, the negativity of the outcome goes up. In other words, I'm going to have a more negative view of the outcome if we lost a lot of people. Okay, if we gain some people, if we kind of held steady, we didn't lose as many, then you're going to have a more positive. The trend is you're going to have a more positive view toward the outcome. Is it making sense? Okay, so let's just review a few things here really quick about yesterday. I've condensed the slides down so they're not multi-step and you can kind of get to it pretty quick. The first thing was I want you to know who we're talking about here so that you know who the numbers are representative of. This was not a random sampling of 100 churches of Christ with 1,000 people. You know, it was like these are congregations who have actually implemented change, not thought about change, not thought about change and didn't do it, not never thought about change. These are congregations that actually went and did something that was from a non-traditional approach. Okay? And the people who responded had to be still present in that congregation. I didn't want people in the survey who said, yeah, I was at this church 10 years ago and my impression of what's going on today is I hear this. I didn't want any of that. These people still have to be present. Okay, and so we got 87 responses, 47 congregations within that, 73% males, 26% female, mostly ministers, a few members, and some elders thrown into the mix. And occasionally, I kind of paired up ministers and elders with the same congregations and kind of ran numbers on minister and elder perspectives in the same church, not just as a whole bunch in the group, okay? And I actually did take out churches that were kind of overrepresented. That was some of my taking out of data was there was a church that was represented, say, like by like 9 people out of, you know, like, say, like 90 responses. And you say, well, that's 10% of my group. Whatever happened in that church is getting an awful lot of weight unless I kind of balance this out randomly. Now I'm going to pick and choose the ones I want to keep in, right? And randomly pull some people out and work from there. So this is also very important. Who are we talking about here? 95% are personally supportive of the change. Again, these are congregations that have actually made the change, okay? And so as you're coming at these numbers, understand these are churches that have made the change. The responses are from mostly ministers, mostly male ministers, some female ministers, mostly male elders, a couple female elders, and some members, male and female, who have been through the change and are still in the congregation, which by default makes them, as you would think, more supportive. They haven't gone anywhere. Okay? So 95% are supportive of the change. And of the 5%, most of those were actually ladies. And I broke this down a little bit cleaner here. How supportive is the congregation today of the changes? And you can pre and post change. And you can actually see on this chart a little bit better how the numbers move. How in time, and Grant mentioned yesterday, maybe in time as, you know, some people who are not supportive of the change may not stay. And so the group of people who are left in the congregation are, by default, more supportive. You know, and the other part of that is over time, I think people who are not as supportive begin to become more comfortable and more supportive as well of some of the changes. So that ran from, you know, at the beginning, I think one of the biggest leaps was on the positive to the overwhelmingly positive. I mean, people were, as a whole, these are changes. These are churches instituting changes are generally more positive on the front end because this is probably why they're looking at doing some of these things. And they became actually more positive as things went along. And these are the changes reported, you know, by frequency. Most of the churches have ladies passing communion and 93% reading scripture on down to preaching and elder preaching at 50% of the congregations that responded and 16% being elders. And the average number of changes out of 7 was 4.82, so about 5 out of 7. And that difference of 2 I mentioned yesterday was mostly preacher and elder. You see a lot of churches just kind of draw a line there to say, you know, we're biblically fine with these, but preacher and elder, we have certain reasons why we're not going to go that route, whether scripturally or what have you. What's the scope of change? 14% reported being fully egalitarian. There's that 35% is saying, well, we, you know, didn't go with preacher and elder, but we did everything else. And then 46% just a variety. Maybe we're allowing reading scripture or just passing communion. It's just kind of a mix. It was 46%. So that leaves almost 50-50. If you look at the split between churches that did every, you know, all the other changes versus churches that went fully egalitarian plus everything but preacher and elder, it's almost a 50-50 split in this group. And this is interesting, you know, how was it rolled out? Because we get really caught up over this. Like churches, you know, they're, how do we do this? How long do you go? Do you just throw it all down at one time? Do you go over, you know, 20 years? You know, kind of what's going to make the difference? You know, what's going to help the congregation the most? And these sorts of questions people are asking. And there was no statistical difference between gradual or all at once. We want to, sometimes we're tempted to say, well, let's report what's statistically significant because that means something. It's actually sometimes very interesting to report what's not statistically significant. That's actually just as helpful. To say there is no relationship between these two things. And actually what you do is in these called discrete groups, because you either rolled out or you didn't. That's two discrete groups. You can't be in both categories. And so you take those categories and you run what's called an analysis of variance in ANOVA, and then it looks at statistical differences between averages or means between those two groups to see if there's a statistical discrepancy between groups that did each on effectiveness, on attitude of the congregation, and these sorts of things. And there was no difference between perceived effectiveness within this the people who responded and how it was actually rolled out. And feel free to ask any questions. This is kind of review if you're here yesterday, and I'm almost through with the review. Anticipating future change, I thought this was very interesting. You know, ministers were less likely to say everything was implemented than elders. Ministers were more likely to say there's more things coming than elders. Elders were more likely to say we're kind of done right here, you know, than ministers were. 84% had some sort of study, 42% of that starting with the leadership. You kind of got that last time. Who made the decision? Mostly elders and ministers. Somebody said, I really have no idea. Actually, they literally said, who knows? That's pretty good. You ever been there? Okay. I've been that 1%. Who knows? I don't know how that happened. Who communicated the decision? It was mostly elders and then following up by ministers, 57% elders. Who announced method of communication, 57% by announcement. And then you see overlap here because they're also giving written communication. See, there's still 69% gave written communication. And you can actually look at it and say, you know, over half of these churches over half of them gave a sermon, written communication, and an announcement. And that's, you know, it's pretty thorough. Average length of study, 8 months. You know, and there was no relationship to speak of between how long a study goes and how effective outcomes are reported to be. And there's always could be a Z factor to this, right? The Z factor meaning there's something outside of this that's impacting that result. In other words, we have a sample of people who are already gung-ho pro all these things, and they may be reporting higher outcomes. I mean, it's potential to say, well, that's maybe explains a little bit of why some of these things are not working out. In other words, if you went to a different sample, a broader group, you might end up seeing a few differences here. And we talk about future study, and there's some things in here we might get into at a later date. And you see there, most of these churches are 10 years out since the last change, which actually was related with positive attitude in the congregation today. The further out you get from the last change, the better people feel. Okay? And we talked about this last week. I'll get back to it some more, but most churches on their goals were about half of them listed. And this was just an open response. This was not 48% out of a list of specific things to check. This is not 48% said we wanted to be scriptural. This is tell us why you did this. What was your goal? This was the first prompt thing that they put in when they started typing. 48% listed faithfulness to scripture. 34% using gifts and talents. And then you see again the drop in support by age, from teens being the high, actually 20s and 30s being slightly the highest, and teens down to the 80s and 90s, and even in the 80s and 90s, you see they're still in the neutral zone. Three being neutral, you know, four being supportive, five being overly supportive or completely supportive. Okay, and attendance change at announcement. Now this is interesting, isn't it? Would you have thought this maybe? Okay. How many churches, what percentage of these churches gained members? 4%, 42% reported no change, 54% lost members. Now, if you add in no change, which is quite a large group at 42%, and gained members, you're still at 46% being break-even or better. Interesting. And I've heard a few people mention kind of a perceived negative bias toward outcomes when it comes to making these changes. And, I mean, I'll tell you, even when I wrote up the survey, as I'm kind of typing through these questions and wrote up 69 questions, as I was typing some of these questions, I had to go back through and edit my questions because I realized they were leaning negative. In other words, when you ask the attendance question, it started off with, seriously, I'm just being completely transparent. How many people did you lose? And then I went back and read my questions. I said, whoa, I am anticipating and assuming that every single person who fills out this survey lost some. I mean, it's like, and guess what? Not everybody did. You know, you go back through, rewrite in neutral, non-prompting, you know, type ways and make it right, make it better. Now, this gets interesting. So as soon as you say something, we are going to study. We are going to talk about. The discussion is going to be on this subject, 7.85%. loss on average across all the congregations represented in the study. At announcement. Now this is not we've even talked about it. This is we're going to talk about it. Okay? Now if you zoom in and kind of think about it like if you took an orange and you peeled the orange and then you pulled a piece out of the orange and looked at that piece, you can do that with a good statistical package. So You can go in and you can select cases to say, I want that slice of the orange, and I'm going to run my stats not on the whole thing in the file, but just on this group. So you select cases and you say, I'm going to choose the group of churches that said, did you what was your change in membership? Gain, loss, or stay the same? You say, I want to select out people who gained members. Let's look just at them. I'm going to select people, I'll get you here, people who lost members, let's look just at them, and people who stayed the same, let's look just at them. So if you pull out just who lost members, you say, if you were to lose members in this process, what might the percentage be? 15.45%. Does that make sense? Okay.
I would just be curious, even with this statistic, of what the turnover rate in these churches is at the time anyway.
If they're...
Yeah, and so... I know in our church we gained 40 people last year and we lost 20, not from doing any of this, just from the nature of where we're located and the nature of where we are. So I wonder if the loss can be simply attributed to this. I wouldn't think that.
Yeah, that's a bad marker there. So what you're saying is, which is a great point. I actually asked this question, but I haven't dove into the numbers on this yet. Is what other factors contributed to your gain or your loss? Okay, so what you're saying is, if a church is already in decline, which average, a lot of churches in decline, and then you make this change, and then you say, well, we decline from there, and then you say, but you were already on a path of decline. Did it speed up or did it slow down? What was the year prior? What was the year prior to that? How much was it actually consistent with the percentage of decline that you've already been experiencing? And at that point, do you say, did this actually really contribute much to an ongoing decline that was already in process? And there were some churches in that reported data that were on an increase that instigated or institute, I should say, change, that implemented change is a better word, that continued to grow drastically. You know? So there's kind of the thought of, you do this thing, and this is going to be like the factor that determines if we're going to grow or decline. Well, first, it's going to matter how you manage that, and second, it's going to matter if you're already growing or not. You know, there were some churches that actually attracted more new people after the change. You know, so that's at announcement, and I want to differentiate these points on the timeline. This is just, again, making an announcement. This is something that, as a congregation, that leadership says, we need to discuss this, whether or not there's a change or not. It's not in the discussion, but this is what we're going to be looking at. Chagrin.
And I wonder, and I think you may have actually wrote on this not terribly long ago, was if maybe the people in the congregation have received the announcement that we're going to study on this, is really already the decision has been made, and now we're going to tell you that this is why we think we're going to do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then if maybe the congregation has even perceived that. So, I mean, it is different on the timeline, but to them, maybe they have perceived that this study means that this is already what we're going to do.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. And I mean, I guess I would ask the question, do you think past history influences that?
Yeah.
Past history of process issues on elder decision making process. In other words, if they say, well, you know, they've said things like this before and they already decided, here it is again. What's going to be different? You know, it's a great question. It's a great question. I think you're onto it for sure. And then I'm almost done with the review here. I know this is kind of lengthy, but I do want to make sure anyone that didn't catch the first session kind of gets the key points. And I want to make sure on the recording, too, that we get this for anybody that's listening there. At implementation, 15% gained, 34% no change, and 52%, about half lost members at implementation. Average loss being slightly higher than at announcement, but not an awful lot more, 8.71%. And if you zoom in on that 52%, the average loss at implementation was 20%. So what you're saying here is you're saying, if I zoom in on churches that did lose, what was their percentage? If I look at churches overall, what was the overall percentage of churches that gained and churches that lost, everybody in between, it's 8.7% loss.
So quick question, so Church Street data, that this 20% loss, that the 52% was different from the 15% loss that was announced at implementation, are they additive or are they inclusive?
That's inclusive.
Okay.
A great question. Yeah, that's inclusive. So it's based, that's calculated from the number of... He said, is this 20%... It's a fantastic question. Thank you for asking that. He said, is this 20% discrete? In other words, is it an additional 20% off or is it 20% including the previous 20%? Now, thank you for asking that. Let me clarify this. This 8.71% is a fresh number calculated off of all the other numbers, okay? This is calculated off of their today versus at... Wait, let me think about this. I don't want to tell you falsely here, okay? Let me think of what was calculated with that thing. I believe that's an inclusive number based plus the other one. I want to tell you right on this. I actually asked the question. I can pull the question up here. Let me give you the breakdown. What's your attendance and contribution today? What was your attendance and contribution prior to all this? And then the question was, how many people did you gain, lose, stay the same? What was your change at announcement? What was your change at implementation? So they're actually two different. This was calculated, so this is actually a standalone additional 20%.
So that's like 35% total for that group.
Of the group that lost. Correct. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for asking that. I wish I'd thought on that a little harder before you asked that, but we'll work on it together for just a second. Okay. But we see that too, don't we? I mean, we've seen that happen. And again, loss hurts. These are people you know. Right? And so, I mean, I remember I mentioned yesterday, one of the respondents mentioned, we're a church of 80 that went to 40 at announcement, that went down by 40 at announcement, that went down by 40 at implementation. So you went from 80 to 40 to zero. But how large are you today? 40? Okay. Okay, so here's where we left off. And I've cleaned this up just a little bit, and I know there's a lot of numbers on this screen, but remember, a negative correlation is as one thing goes up, something else goes down in relationship. Okay? So as attendance changes, the view of effectiveness changes. Okay? So as more people leave, they view it as less effective. As more people leave, the congregational attitude also is affected negatively. In other words, if they report higher number of leaving is a lower number of satisfaction or outcome variable. Does that make sense? Effectiveness, attitude, general impact, and outcome of the congregation. Those are kind of the three main questions. What was the effectiveness of what you've implemented? What was the general attitude of the congregation toward these changes? Okay. What is the overall impact on the congregation, positive or negative? And so as more people leave, effectiveness, attitude, and general outcomes tend to go down. Makes sense? What's positively correlated is age of the congregation. Okay? So the older the congregation, the more people they tend to lose. It's a trend. It doesn't determine anything. You hear the phrase correlation does not mean causation, right? So this is a trend. It doesn't mean that it always works that way, that it has to work that way, that it determines something. This is just a trend. It's a relationship.
Is that age of the church, like an 80-year-old church, or is that the average age of the...
Age of the church. Okay. This is actually, how long has the church been around? How long since you were founded? Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah. Okay. Great question. Yeah. Thank you for asking that. Yeah, so churches that have been around longer the trend is lose more people. Now, so keep this in mind. If you're a fresh church plant, and you're coming into this with the idea that this is one of our undergirding principles, then everyone who's coming in on board from the front end is more amenable to this sort of thing. If you're a church that's been around for 200 years, 100 years, 90 years, then that's going to not be, you're not starting with those principles on the front end. And so that makes some sense. Okay? And as you would imagine, attendance is highly correlated with contribution, right? The more people you have, the more contribution you have, and that sort of thing. Let me get to one other thing here. We're kind of done. Congregational attitude is positively correlated with the years since implementation. And we kind of talked about this. 10.24 years is on average. And the longer you go since you've implemented, some churches say 20 plus years, okay? The longer, the further you are out from that, the better the outcome. The higher the numbers on attitude and effectiveness and things like that. And notice this congregational attitude was not correlated with length of time of rollout. It was not correlated with length of time of study and some of these things. And why is that important? You say, well, and I'll get to that in a minute more, but, you know, boy, I wish we would have done this more. I wish we would have taken more time for X, Y, and Z. That doesn't mean don't take your time, but it shows that just taking your time does not guarantee anything. There's other variables that affect outcome than just, well, we sure took a long time. You know, other people are saying, yeah, we sure took a long time. Comparing today against when the changes were implemented, here's on the contribution end, okay? 43% reported a lower contribution, losing contribution, 29% stayed the same, 28% gained. Okay, this is today versus implement, today versus when the changes actually took place. Okay, of those who lost, 43% lost. The average loss of contribution was 24%. Now, I did not ask this, if you're going to go into your question, I did not ask this at announcement and implementation. I just asked it on the end. When you actually made the change, what happened to the numbers? Okay, of the 28% that gained, the average gain was 10%. And again, I think a lot of those churches were already on a growth track. Of the gaining churches, were already on very much a growth track. Okay? Okay. And we already said that. Attendance up and down is correlated with, you know, results. If attendance goes down, results tend to people feel worse about it. Now, what was interesting about that is contribution did not correlate with those same things. That's really interesting. So when people leave, it impacts people's perceptions of what happened. When the money goes down, it doesn't have the same effect. I thought that was really interesting. It kind of, in our minds, people are more important than money. Is the budget getting met or not? Well, I don't know, but Susie's not here anymore, or John left, or, you know, or however that goes, you know. Find that to be pretty interesting. Now, this kind of struck me because I was kind of noticing as I was kind of going through the numbers what seemed to kind of be fairly consistent here. How about contribution per attendee? Because it felt like of churches that were losing members, that the contribution, and just kind of as I was kind of kept looking at the numbers without running anything, but I kept going up through the columns and making calculations and things, and it just felt like the contribution numbers were not going down as fast as the attendance numbers. I kept saying, well, let me just see. Let's look at it. Okay, so pre-change, the average contribution per attendee was 34.18. So if you take their total attendance and you divide it with the contribution, $34.18 per attendee. Does that make sense? Okay, post-change, 36.53. So after the changes, they may be down, some of these churches, or was it 43%, you know, down in attendance. But the people who remain increase their giving. Does that make sense? By 7%. I mean, you still have a budget to meet. That didn't change, right? Okay. And the people who are still there really probably believe in the cause and the sort of thing and are still there. Contribution per attendee went down for 40%, but went up by 50% of the churches and went up significantly in many of those churches, actually, quite significantly. Okay, now this is a really interesting one, and I only have a few more slides, and we'll ask some questions here. One of the things I've mentioned so far is being related to outcome, positive outcome, negative outcome, is length of time since implementation. Now, this is really, really important. I don't want you to miss this. You know, Scripture was also the when you ask the question, how important was Scripture in your process from extremely important, important, you know, neutral, not important, extremely unimportant, you know. That level, that 1 through 5 Likert scale, correlated with some things. The more Scripture was emphasized in the process, the better the general attitude toward the changes were. I think that is extremely important. The more Scripture was emphasized, the effectiveness, the attitude, the works, all those, the outcome variables all improved with Scripture, the love with Scripture being more emphasized than less. The less Scripture was emphasized, the more poor the outcome variables tended to be. Okay? All right, and now we get back again to, well, it's kind of fun to report what was significant, but what was not significant? Because we can get kind of tied up on a lot of things and say, well, we got to make sure this, got to make sure that, or this is really important or not. Well, maybe some of it's not as important as we tend to think. And again, what I want to get you to see here is what I'm trying to do in these two sessions, I'm trying to be descriptive. I'm not trying to be prescriptive. You go to the pharmacy and get your prescription, right? It's going to do something. It's going to tell you, they're going to give you instructions and you're going to take this pill. You know, I'm trying to be descriptive. I'm trying to say, what is happening out there? How is it going down? What are the impacts? How are people feeling about it? Because you hear a lot of stuff, and there's nothing behind really any of it other than here's kind of what I think or how I feel or what happened over here. So length of study did not correlate with outcomes. So in other words, since this is not prescriptive, don't think to yourself, well, then if we just had less study. I mean, you know, that's not really the point. As we said, you know, more emphasis of Scripture is better. Okay? Which makes sense in our fellowship. That's what we're all about. Scripture is highly, highly important and valued. Length of study did not correlate with attendance numbers, contribution numbers, attitude of people, any of that. Length of implementation didn't correlate. In other words, if we just took longer, you know, more people might be on board or whatever. It's like, that didn't correlate either. That didn't correlate either. And again, the age of the congregation, it did correlate with attendance, but it didn't correlate with anything else. Didn't correlate with attitudes or any of that kind of stuff. Okay, so let's look at a few things here. These are people who have been through making the changes. They're on the other side of this on some level. Maybe some are still in the middle of it. What is your change in support level from when you first began implementing this? 53% more supportive, 39% stayed the same, and 3% less supportive. Now, that's interesting. Because we just said, I mean, you know, what's the percentage? I mean, we're talking loss for some, for slightly under half, or are losing some contribution and losing some members, and they're still saying this is still in their mind. I mean, it seems to me they're saying we still feel like this is the right course of action. Maybe even more supportive, half more supportive. Okay, we've already kind of gone over that. Now, this is I'll mention the second point on this slide. The more years since the change is correlated with the older members and their attitude, but not the younger. And that makes some sense. I mean, because the younger members, you're talking teens and 20s. You know, if you've been at this for 10 years, 5, 10 years, I mean, they might have been 7 when you started, 6. I mean, the older 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s have increased better attitude over time as well, whereas the younger people don't exhibit that correlation. Okay, so how about attendance today? We said, and I kind of messed up on my numbers. I missed recording a number, so I didn't get the same or higher individually. But today, the 40% are still experiencing a lower percentage than when they first started talking about this, 60% being either the same or higher. I wish I had gotten that those two broken down. I'm sorry for that. How about contribution? 43% are still lower today than they were at implementation. 29% are hanging steady. 29% are actually at a gain in contribution since implementation today. This is today's numbers. Where are we at versus what you reported when all this kind of got started off? So, what if you got a do-over?
Good question.
Would you do it? What do you think?
Yes.
Yes? How about that? 90%. Yes. Well, what would you do different? 49%, nothing. 26%, move faster. Now, remember, what was the average length of study?
8 months.
Or 8 months, you're right. Average length of study was 8 months. 8 months, average length of implementation was?
8 years.
8 years. Okay. So, yeah, okay, move faster. Move slower, 1%. Actually need to take more time. And I would be curious to look at that 1% and say, what was their process? Might have been the person that says, I don't know where the change came from and nothing was said and Scripture wasn't. I mean, who knows? I don't remember what that was.
I have a question.
Sure.
On this one, move faster, move slower, was there a distinction about study versus implementation? Did they want to move faster on implementation or that was just a general question?
Yeah, that on this question, how would you do it differently, was just open-ended.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't open. Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the format of that question. There's 69 questions, so my brain's a little taxed.
No, I totally get it. Okay. I just wondered if there was a breakdown.
Yeah. No, I don't. I would have to look at it. And I will say this. I'll leave a piece of paper up here. If there's questions, you have an email and you have a specific question, I'll do my best to get you an answer to it. Okay? Okay, change in volunteerism, because there's a lot of things that get said about stuff like this. Change in volunteerism. Well, we're just doing this because the men aren't doing anything. You ever hear that?
I heard the other way around. We don't want to do that because we don't want our men to quit doing things.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Okay.
68% increased participation, 28% no change. So people are not backing off participating for the most part. And let me do this one here. Where is it? Oh, I had the men in here. Wait a minute. Where is it? I had the...
There it is.
There. Did you experience a change in male participation? Increased 15%, no change 79%, and 6% had a decrease. That tells you a lot. Because that said a lot, I think. I've heard that repeatedly. Okay. Did you know that 6% of churches that go through this experience a decrease in male participation? That's an important number. How would you say?
It's also perception and low enough to be in the grass, it seems like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Changes the numbers of visitors. So 51% are actually reporting an increase in visitors post change. And again, keep in mind, some of this is church plants that are probably going to grow from the get-go. Some of these are churches that are already in a growth mode that are continuing to grow. It would be very interesting to have asked, well, were you already experiencing an increase in participation or increase in visitors? You know, what's your track record? What are the numbers? How many new people come on a given week? And did that go up or down? And it'd be interesting to kind of talk about implications for future study, to kind of get some more running start numbers, you know, kind of running through this from before.
Can you break this
through
down at all by what inclusion did you have the same reaction if you just passed the plate as opposed to lead a public prayer as to be making women deacons or elders?
Right.
Or did you lump it all together, any change,
right,
period?
I'm gonna answer that and add one piece to that, okay? I did break that down and look at that, and I did not find, in other words, you run what's called, again, an analysis of variance that says these are two discrete groups. You either did this or you did that, and there was no statistical difference in the outcome variables of churches that did these various levels of implementation. Now, again, and I say this cautiously, but I'm not pointing at any individual that took the survey. I'm talking about 87 responses on a general level. Remember the sample. You've always, in statistics, remember your sample, right? Because these are 95% people who are supportive of the change, who are self-reporting back on their experience of congregational engagement, attitude, effectiveness, you know, all those sorts of things. Outcome variables are being self-reported by people who are mostly ministers and elders, although they might be even more sensitive to that, honestly. But they are for this. You know what I mean? So that's why when we talked about yesterday, the gentleman here and someone right here, we talked about... we talked about the need to get more member data. Where's the membership actually, rather than having leadership self-report back on their experience of what they experienced through the process? That's a lot cleaner data. Does that make sense? So that would be a really interesting one. Because I really think my hunch would be, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but my hunch would be, again, this is not all Churches of Christ. Now, if you opened it up to all Churches of Christ, you'd see some really interesting numbers, you know. But it would seem to me that you might get a little more differentiation if you had members reporting on their comfortability with certain levels of change. Yeah, I would wonder that, at least. That's a great question. Okay. And again, we kind of went over this, but not entirely. 90% reported Scripture being majorly emphasized. 48% said the goal of making changes was to be more in line with Scripture. That's really important. I mean, 48%, the first thing they wrote down was Scripture. Because what do you hear? What do you hear? You know what I'm asking for.
Scripture to do
this. Right. You don't care about Scripture. Scripture must not mean anything to you.
That we're doing it to be popular.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
Well, hey, guess what? And again, this is self-report. there wasn't a single person in there that wrote to be popular, to be culturally relevant, to, you know, these sorts of things. I mean, it was all giftedness, expressing the image and glory of God on a more holistic level. These sorts of things, right? Being faithful to what Scripture, what we believe Scripture is teaching. Because we believe Scripture teaches this, then we're going to do that. Not we believe this, so we're going to make Scripture say that, right? I mean, there's a difference in that. So, I mean, this is, in other words, this is based out of a scriptural conviction that this is the right change, not, you know, because we're just so immersed in the world that now we must view the Scripture to say this, and now we're, so we're, you know, and obviously that can happen. No, I'm not saying that can't happen, but no one seems to be, and maybe, well, would you say that? You know, so. Preacher count. And I would love to actually gather some data on this. I was thinking, like put a picture of, like, a single person on a picture and say, how many people do you see? You know, and then have preachers answer, and then members answer. So you run an analysis and you say, was there any difference in averages on the numbers between preachers, elders, and members? That wasn't any average. And I just kind of found that was interesting. Preacher, and what you actually end up finding, I think, if you really got under this, is I think you would find everyone overestimates. I think. So in other words, how many people did you lose? My hunch is everyone overestimates. Because it sure felt like, you know, that. That's my hunch. Who knows? Sure. There you go. Perfect.
Nice questions. So you mentioned in earlier slides that there was 47 churches represented. So my first question is, do we have an idea of how many churches have implemented changes with respect to genders? And
how many total?
Yeah, just in the U.S. Do we have any field or...
Well,
47 seems like a lot to me.
Yeah, I got 47 different churches represented. There were probably another that I knew of. I don't know.
Kent Sikorski reports about 100.
Yeah, that's probably. I would have probably guessed just under that, but he wouldn't know if that's his.
So about 100.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Thank you for saying that. Based on what I literally saw of actual congregational names and things, it was slightly less. But he would. I mean, there's obviously I'm not catching the net of all that are there.
Well, there's also a website that has some of that information too, and I don't know how updated it is, but you can get a lot of information.
Yeah, there is a website. If you look up gender inclusive churches, Churches of Christ on Google, it'll be probably the top hit, and it lists by state churches and supporting statements from websites and bulletins and things that kind of give you an idea of what changes have been implemented. And on that site, I'd hate to give a number, but it's less than 100, I think, are listed on that site, but it's over 50.
Out of how many total churches of Christ?
How many total churches of Christ?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Because it doesn't seem like a lot.
No, that's, I mean, it's a small number. Yeah, it's a very small number. Yeah.
So, one more question.
These are the churches that we know of.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, there's churches just not going to, they're just going to do that, and we're autonomous, and they're going to just... Here's what we're doing.
So Carol Osborne wrote in his book that early on in one of his books, he said that the question of what can women do is kind of an irrelevant question. The main question is, how shall we view women in our fellowships? And I wonder if there's a way to, do you have any ideas of a way to quantify that?
Oh, goodness.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question because... You know, when you do something like this, that's always your question is, what are the implications for a future study? If you're going to do more, what are some of the angles you're going to get? So coming into this study, I asked a group of ministers, what would you really want to know? And then try to use some of their input. And I'd be curious if you all have other questions that you would be curious to see the answer of. If there's some commonality and several people are saying similar things, I'd be very curious to hear that. Sure.
You may have mentioned this yesterday, but where are these churches located?
They were pretty scattered, but I would say they were scattered within a pretty typical Church of Christ distribution. So in other words, where you don't find Churches of Christ, you're not finding much of this. You kind of do, you know, you got some out west, you got some down through the south, through Texas, through the southeast, and coming up the north coast. But guess what? In the middle, you don't have a lot of Churches of Christ. It's less prevalent. Does it make sense? So I didn't really run the numbers on that. I'd say they're probably more larger cities, more so than rural. But they were of all sizes. I mean, you had churches at 50, 60, 70, 80 doing this, all the way up to very large churches.
I'd be curious how many of the people that left moved on to another Church of Christ versus left faith altogether.
Right.
And so how would that correlate in the way that you assess,
right,
evaluate the effectiveness of this?
Yeah. I would be curious to hear from you all, because my experience would be people leave to go to another Church of Christ. Anybody? I mean, it's... I can't think of a single person that I've ever known to just lose their faith over this. I'm sure it's probably, maybe it's happened. They've looked at all the, you know, however the process came about, and, you know, I don't know. That's a great question, and something certainly to think about. Sure, Grant?
Well, the experience is kind of close to us. Churches, you know, a little bit north of where we're at, several made that decision. They've had a lot of people leave, but what has happened is that the next step down, a conservative church that felt closest like that, you know, that was more conservative on this issue, maybe progressive on some other issues, blew up. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
All of those members, it didn't seem like any of them were leaving swelling Christianity.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure that they're, I hate to say that,
yeah,
that's such a inclusive number. We don't know everybody, but yeah, it seems like that those guys were all migrating to the church.
Yeah. We had someone we're close to a while back say, you know, wow, our church is really growing because the church across town made this change. And then I said, well, what are you going to do the first time they get frustrated with in your church? You know, it's like...
I think it's interesting that many of the women who were disappointed that the implementation didn't go as far as they wanted to left the church across and went to the disciples.
Yeah. That's a great point. So that kind of goes both ways. And you know, you talk about risk and loss. Risk and loss is on both sides of the equation. There are some churches in the position of, if you don't do anything, you're actually risking and you're losing if you do something. So, you know, that's just something to be considered. But that's, yeah. Thank you for bringing in that other side, because this is definitely there's bookends on this thing.
Have you noticed?
Sorry. I just got like 1 minute, so let me just say, okay, we'll catch up after though. Okay, if I don't catch you, let's catch up after.
Is your work published someplace or posted?
It's not, but I'll put it online. I'll probably put it at wineskins.org, most likely.
The second question is, how far is the furthest that congregations went? In other words, women serving as preaching ministers, what's the furthest?
Elders, preaching and elders. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. That was, the 17% of respondents, yeah, reported that. And there were female elders in the survey as well in Churches of Christ who took the survey. Yeah. Okay. And if I didn't get your question, please come up and we'll talk. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.